Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Hello.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. We're here until 3. We hope you are too. Sun is shining on Michigan Avenue. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Ave. We'll be here, like I said, until 3. Then Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis, and company will stroll into the studio and entertain and inform you even more. But now it's me and some big thoughts about, well, a poor little dog. Actually, it's a big dog at Midway, walking around, anxious, all of these unfamiliar faces, all of these people. And the dog tends to relieve itself when it's in an anxious situation at an airport. I'm the same way.
Can you blame her?
Totally understand that. How many of us have not been in that situation before? But you would think that that would be sort of a deal breaker, that if you are the dog at the airport and you don't
They think she's going to grow out of it. So she's only been on the job for 4 months. She's a two-year-old dog, and they just feel like the more she's out there and the more she's doing her D-U-T-Y, that she'll not do the
D-O-O-D-Y. Yeah, right. Not exactly sure how you spell duty, but I know where you're going with that.
I still wouldn't walk up to her and pet her.
Well, yeah, and I'd hate to be on the cleanup end of that detail,
apparently
too.
Apparently it's easy cleanup, so.
Okay, fine.
So I hear.
I'm also waiting to hear from Rick Hogan. I noticed in the Chicago Tribune today on page 2, they have a story about the Billy Goat Tap, which has a couple of locations in Chicago. One of them is, of course, just downstairs below the Tribune Tower and lower Michigan Avenue. And there, at the Billy Goat, they are now serving their fancy own brand of IPA and Pilsner beers. That just seems so un-Billy Goat-ish. The Billy Goat is cheeseburger, chips, Coke, and maybe, you know, a Hams. That they have their own Billy Goat IPA and Billy Goat Pilsner. I get it, you got to be with the times, but that just doesn't seem to be the stuff of them. Although, to be honest with you, I don't go to the Billy Goat, and I thought, oh, I think I'll swing down there and try one of those out. So maybe that will work, but I still think that's not the brand of the Billy Goat. Next thing you know, they're going to have a charcuterie, and well, then it just won't be the Billy Goat anymore. Now, will it? Would you like to see our cheese plate, sir? I'm like, no, you're the Billy Goat. I want you to yell at me and give me a cheeseburger that I don't want. That's what I want you to do at the Billy Goat. We'll talk about net neutrality after 2 o'clock. We'll visit with somebody who's on the pro side and somebody who's on the con side. You would think that the world is going to end with this net neutrality ruling. Here's why it's hard to put it in the right box, whatever that is, and I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. But most people don't like Donald Trump. Donald Trump appointed the chairman of the FCC. The FCC chair used to be the boss at Verizon, and so he's very pro-Trump and very pro-business, and they said, we're going to get rid of net neutrality. If you don't like Donald Trump, therefore, you are worried about this ruling. I mean, how could anybody be against something that is as good-sounding as net neutrality? The internet should be neutral. That's a good thing for everybody. So if you're against that, and by golly, it's Donald Trump, then, well, you must be bad. And I don't know that that's the truth of the matter. We'll talk about that after 2 o'clock. I put on my Twitter page or on my Twitter feed, you can follow me at WGN King John on Twitter. I hope you do. That's my handle, WGN King John on Twitter. I posted a picture of the front page of a stack of pages I have. There are 8 of them stapled together. And it's a New York Times story that I printed out a few weeks ago. After Weinstein, a list of men accused of sexual misconduct. So it goes for many pages, and it's a description of them. James Toback and, you know, some of the early ones, of course, are Harvey Weinstein. Just looking at the list here. Jeffrey Tambor. It kind of works its way through to the top page was at that time Charlie Rose, Glenn Thrush at the New York Times, and Senator Al Franken. But since then, I've had to pencil in more and more names. I'm using this as my scorecard. And the problem with my scorecard right now is that I don't have much more space on the front page for the new names I keep adding. There's Matt Lauer penciled in with the note, and Charlie Rose and Garrison Keillor, and there's, John Lasseter over at Pixar, and Trent Franks and Blake Fahrenholt and Matt Lauer's added to the list. Ryan Lizett, The New Yorker. Mario Batali this week. And now today we add to the club Morgan Spurlock and Tavis Smiley at PBS. This is very interesting the way these two guys handled it. Smiley, because maybe it's not true, or maybe it is, but Smiley is fighting it adamantly. He said, "Heaven help us." Here's a quote from him. He said, "If having a consensual relationship with a colleague years ago is the stuff that leads to this kind of public humiliation and personal destruction, heaven help us," says Smiley. And he's suing and he's fighting. He's worked too long and too hard to get this reputation. He's not going to let a false allegation ruin everything he's built. There's Tavis. That's Tavis Smiley. Morgan Spurlock, in fact, had not been called out by anybody. So here's what Spurlock says. And, you know, he's the guy that did Super Size Me. He has a television show. He's written books, movies. Spurlock. He said, "As I sit around watching hero after hero, man after man fall, at the realization of their past indiscretions, I don't sit by and wonder who will be next. I wonder, when will they come for me? I am part of the problem. Over my life," and then this is his confessional. It's stunning in a way. I mean, it's really honest. "Over my life, there have been many instances, particularly for somebody nobody asked." And here he is just gushing. He said, "Over my life, there have been many instances that parallel what we see every day in the news. When I was in college, a girl who I hooked up with one night on a one-night stand accused me of rape. There were no charges or investigations, but she wrote about the instance in a short story writing class and called me by name. I was floored. That was not what happened, I told her. This wasn't how I remember it at all. In my mind, we'd been drinking all night. We went back to my room. We began fooling around. She pushed me off. Then we laid in the bed and talked and laughed some more, and then began fooling around again. We took off our clothes. She said she didn't want to have sex, so we laid together and talked and kissed and laughed, and then we started having sex. And then she started to cry. We stopped. I believed that she was feeling better. She believed that she was raped. That's why I'm part of the problem. Then there was the time I settled a sexual harassment allegation at my office. That was around 8 years ago, and it wasn't a gropey, feely harassment. It was verbal, and it was just as bad. I would call my female assistant hot pants or sex pants when I was yelling to her from the other side of the office, something I thought was funny at the time, but then I realized I had completely demeaned and belittled her to a place of non-existence. So, when she decided to quit, she came to me and said if I did not pay her a settlement, she would tell everyone. Being who I was, it was the last thing I wanted, so of course I paid. I paid for peace of mind. I paid for her silence and cooperation. Most of all, I paid so I could remain who I was. I am part of the problem." That's an interesting part of the story, isn't it? I mean, is that blackmail? He says it's not. He said, nope. I did. He is owning that scene. And that's where Smiley gets off. Smiley is going in the exact opposite direction. Spurlock continues, "Then there's the infidelity. I have been unfaithful to every wife and girlfriend I have ever had. Over the years, I would look each of them in the eye and proclaim my love and then have sex with other people behind their backs. I'm someone who consistently hurts those people closest to me, from my wife to my friends to my family to my partners and coworkers. I have helped create a world of disrespect through my own actions. And I am part of the problem." And then he asked the question that all of us ask about these guys. Why do you do this? And his answer about himself is, I don't know. He said, "Is it because my father left my mother when I was a child? Is it because I've consistently been drinking since the age of 13? I have not been sober for more than a week in 30 years. Boy, you think you know these people. I didn't know that about Morgan Spurlock. He also mentions he suffers from depression. And all the sexual dalliances, were they meaningful or did they only serve to make a weak man feel stronger? He writes, I don't know. I am part of the problem. but I am also part of the solution. And then he finally says this, I hope to empower the change within myself. We should all find the courage to admit we are at fault. I will do better. I will be better. I believe we all can. The only individual I have control over is me. So starting today, I'm going to be more honest with you and myself. I'm going to lay it all out in the open. Maybe that will be a start. That's kind of a hard promise to make, but God bless him. He's going to try. And, you know, again, it's interesting to me, too, that not all of these guys are the same. Not all of their sins are similar. Some of them maybe should be on the list. Maybe some of them should not. But I have this 8 pages stapled together. And that man, Morgan Spurlock, is now penciled into the top, along with Tavis Smiley. And Smiley's just ticked. Smiley says, no way. What he says in a minute. Hey, if you're online, also go to my Facebook page. On Facebook, I have posted a link to the Lou Malnati's Taste of Chicago page. You can order there. But also there, you can tell me, what is the strangest, dumbest, or weirdest Christmas gift you ever got? And we'll pick some of them for a $100 gift card to Lou Malnati's. How about that? $100 gift card to that Taste of Chicago thing they got? Just tell me what's the weirdest, dumbest, strangest Christmas gift you ever got. And we'll take some phone calls on that a little later on, too. By the way, Steve, did you remember yesterday Lou Manfredini and I were kind of...
The pop-up bar?
Yeah, we were talking about going to Fitzgerald's in Berwyn last night with our wives and go to the It's a Wonderful Life Christmas pop-up bar.
Yeah, you're right, exactly. Clarence's or not? That's the Angel.
Yeah, in fact, the place is on Clarence Street.
Well, weird. Did you go?
So we did. We went over. We had dinner out, and then we walked over to Fitzgerald's. And remember I had said, Lou, I can't believe that you were able to get in because these pop-up bars,
right. They're
long lines, and you can't get reservations. He goes, right away I went online, and we got reservations, and we put them in our name.
That's wild because last night I was home, and I was telling Sharon, I'm like, we don't have anything to do tonight. It's really weird. And she's like, well, what are your friends John and Lou doing? Well, I don't know.
Well, you could have come down to Berwyn and done this. Sorry we didn't include you.
No, it's okay.
Well, here's what happened. We walked into Fitzgerald's and we said, we're Manfredini's. And they said, nope, somebody's already here in that name. Somebody used our...
Nice.
And when I said that on the radio yesterday, I thought, maybe this isn't a good strategery for us. That if we say, hey, it'll be... the four of us in the Manfredini name going to the pop-up bar that you can't get into, but they did take reservations. Maybe that's not a good plan.
Well, see, that's when you go to Fitzgerald's and you say, this is the power of WGN Radio. You should be advertising. Look, we reached your customers.
I know, really. We really do. So there was somebody sitting in there having a gay old time, and we were not able to go into the movie viewing area. But we were able to hang around the bar. They are doing an It's a Wonderful Life at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn. So, okay, just this is Tavis Smiley's take on this story. So, Spurlock, nobody even accused. I mean, we've all been saying that. There was, you know, Charlie Rose reporting on Harvey Weinstein knowing they could come for him, they did. There was Matt Lauer reporting on Charlie Rose knowing they could come for him, they did. There was Tavis Smiley reporting on all of that. They came for him. But Smiley says, wait a minute. He's been indefinitely suspended from his show. He's 53 years old over at PBS for sexual misconduct. He said he was shocked and intends to fight back. He said he has the utmost respect for women and celebrates their courage for telling the truth. He said, let me assure you that I have never groped, inappropriately exposed myself, or coerced any colleague in the workplace ever in my 30-year career. If having a consensual relationship with a colleague years ago is the stuff that leads to this kind of humiliation and personal destruction, heaven help us. See, that's a different thing. If you have a consensual relationship with a colleague at work, maybe that's against work rules. You probably shouldn't do that. But, I mean, you shouldn't do that. But, I mean, you shouldn't cheat on your spouse or whoever. But that's not the same as calling an intern into your office and pulling your pants down. But the network says they've uncovered multiple credible allegations of conduct that's inconsistent with their values at PBS, such as they are. Allegations that Smiley, no, that was a shot at NPR, pardon me. Allegations that Smiley had engaged in sexual relationships with multiple subordinates are out there. Multiple subordinates. Allegations. Some witnesses expressed concern that their employment status was linked to the status of a sexual relationship with Smiley. And Smiley may not agree with that. He may not even know that. That's the weird thing about this. If you create an environment where the women in the office think you can't say anything or you have to laugh or go along, you may not realize they're cooperating that way. But on, well, here's what it feels like to them. If we don't do this, we're out of a job or we never advance. You don't get to be stupid about that. They described the longtime TV personality as creating a verbally abusive and threatening environment, and they raised concerns about retaliation. The investigation asked the individuals if Smiley ever made them feel uncomfortable in the workplace, and some of them said yes. But he says there was no due process. He had to fight to get a word in, and now he says he's going to fight back. They've halted distribution of his program. So he's on the list now. And he's an interesting story, Tavis Smiley. Grew up in a poor Pentecostal family in a trailer outside Kokomo, Indiana. Nine siblings and cousins lived together. His stepfather beat him and his sister so brutally once they were sent to a hospital and then to foster care. Graduated. No, he didn't graduate from. He went to Indiana University, eventually dropped out. Got a job at BET. Doing a talk show, BET Tonight with Tavis Smiley. Among his early interviews was a conversation with President Bill Clinton. He gave Smiley his first one-on-one interview following the revelation of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. So we'll see how that one goes. But he says he's going to fight it. Nobody asked Spurlock, and he volunteered it.
He and I danced in the lobby down there by you, the Tribune Tower one. A couple years ago.
Just like, you want to explain that?
No, I think I said enough. He was on Dancing with the Stars.
Was he really? I don't remember that.
A couple years ago.
How did I miss that?
So he interviewed him up here, and then I ride down the elevator, and we're chit-chatting, and he's talking about dancing. He's like, here, let me show you. And then
did he really?
Next thing I knew, we were doing a dance step.
Did he grope you or say anything inappropriate?
We were dancing on the first floor of the Tribune Tower.
So no.
Did you voice anything?
Did you express your concerns to a supervisor?
Not yet.
Once upon a time, this sort of chit-chat was funny and okay. Not anymore. Literally, I had this conversation with my son the other day, and we may talk about it in the 2 o'clock hour later this week, or maybe never, but it is the conversation about Baby It's Cold Outside and how icky that song feels. And some people think that's the very definition of us losing our minds over this. But I'm kind of in the camp that I can't enjoy that song so much anymore.
Because you've heard it 50,000 times.
I love that song, and I love the worst version of it, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald.
The song it didn't exist in our popular culture. I mean, it went away until about 15 years ago, and now it's back everywhere. Right?
Well, maybe it's cold outside?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that so much as I'd notice now that I'm uncomfortable with it being. You're not? You don't see that as like, wow, look at it's to me.
I think we can fight this war on some more important fronts.
Okay.
Than a cheesy Christmas song.
Well, it feels a little to me like if you're watching an old movie and they do a blackface skit, if they do a minstrel skit, you know, holy cow. But once upon a time, that was okay and funny. I feel that way about this song a little bit. No?
I think they're flirting.
They are.
She's flirting too. They're both flirting.
More later. News is next. This is WGN. By the way, Steve, you know how companies do scavenger hunts sometimes when they're in Chicago?
Yes.
One of them's outside our showcase studio
nice.
Window. Hi, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey!
Where are you from? Who are you?
We're the Grumpy Elves.
I know, you're the Grumpy Elves. You are not.
I've been in Blast Radius.
I've seen Grumpy Elves before. You are not Grumpy Elves. So you're on the radio. Say Merry Christmas.
Yay!
They get bonus points for that. Thank you. Happy holidays.
Was that a bar crawl or a work event?
What was the big bar crawl? Yeah, I don't think there's a difference for some of these. But what was the big one they had last weekend?
T-box.
Yes, T-Box.
I was there.
Is that the crawl of all
yes.
the
way? Yes. It's up by Wrigley and Southport,
there.
And I drove through it.
I did too, John. I
didn't know what it was. What is T-Box?
It's a mess.
12 bars of Christmas.
Ah. Phil Vitale from the Tribune is also in our studio.
I almost ran over an elf and a Jesus in one light. I'm not kidding you. Right at Clark and Addison, there was a Jesus that walked in front of me and then an elf.
Yeah, I was equally parts attracted to, like, a part of me thought, oh, I want to be that. I want to be in that group. And another part thought, no. You could not drag me to this thing.
A lot of those guys didn't know they were part of it either.
Violetta, what's the appropriate ruling on that? Is that something that one should really want to do or stay away from?
I think it depends where you are in your life.
Yeah.
No, that was
Hold
diplomatic.
On a second,
that
Phil.
Was diplomatic.
Maybe I'm not there. Go ahead, Violetta. Keep talking.
Right. I don't think maybe you should have been a part of it, but for the people that were, I'm sure they enjoyed themselves thoroughly.
So, like, I could have been there.
Oh,
see,
no.
This is the thing. So I'm not young and hip enough?
Well, I mean, you do have that suit that looks green with all the trees on it, so you would have fit in.
The Pete McMurray suit, yeah, right. Yeah, in fact, really, I do have the clothes that would be wacky, zany. Hey, we're partying at Christmas!
Mm-hmm.
I have a suit like that.
Right.
I don't know that I have the disposition like that.
I don't
that.
Think you could have lasted the 12 bars.
So that's what it is. It's a 12-bar crawl.
Yes.
It's the
39 bars? 39 bars?
Yes, there are many, 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 many bars.
Yeah. But, and some of the people look like they were trying to hit all of them.
Right. And I would go there and I would be in my hippest looking outfit and it would be, I'm trying way too hard.
I know.
Would be just sad.
It wouldn't come natural for me, Phil.
Mm-mm.
That's for sure.
I couldn't do that when I was the right age to do that.
Well, that
to
was,
be honest
I
with
gotta,
you.
That's the thing. I've thought about this before. Thank you for asking, Doctor. When I get to live my life over again, I'm going to be better at being young when I'm young.
Right.
Because I wasn't. Even then, all of the guys in my business wanted to be rock and roll disc jockeys, and they would go to the bars and party, and that was never a natural fit for me. I
yes.
was always the guy in a blazer.
The
know,
youth
listening.
Is wasted on the young. Is so true, yeah. And you take a while before you realize how true it is.
I found a woman that liked me even though I had a collection of Barry Manilow records in my college dorm room
mm-hmm.
that I shared with my mother.
Ah, the records, not the dorm room.
Thank you. Okay, so where were we? Phil Vitale is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. Nice to see you, Phil. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming in again. He's been joining us on Wednesdays, this week on Thursdays, often about this time. His latest review is of the Heritage Restaurant and Caviar Bar. Talk about a bad, an odd fit. Heritage Restaurant and Caviar Bar. There's a caviar bar?
Yes. There's a physical caviar bar, but of course, if you're just sitting at one of the tables, you can get full-on caviar service anyway.
Can you just get like a steak frites or a pasta dish as well?
Yes, you can.
And what is the menu at Heritage?
The menu, as the name sort of suggests, it's old school kind of food, but with a very strong emphasis on Eastern European food. So there is Czech style roasted duck, and there is pelmeni dumplings, and things like that.
And they have stroganoff?
They do, and it's really really good.
I love stroganoff.
My wife had an Alsatian grandmother, and she made that kind of stuff because while she was Alsatian by birth, she lived up in what is now, I guess, would be Croatia, and it wasn't then. And that's her style of cooking, and that was Sunday supper when I went over there.
Violetta, does your family serve at their restaurant, stroganoff? Do they have that on the menu up there?
No, we have goulash, short rib goulash, schnitzel, stuffed cabbage.
At Bucharest?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So back to Heritage. So it's that kind of a menu. Well, then I guess a caviar bar would be somewhat fitting with the room.
Right, the Russian overtones.
Yeah,
but,
right.
The cool thing is they have caviar from more than a dozen different fish. So you can go even from like little like domestic stuff, like paddlefish that you might get in Kentucky or something like that.
Oh, I thought it was only the roe or the eggs from what
sturgeons.
Sturgeon, yeah.
That's the fancy stuff. That's what you pay through the nose for. But you can, I mean, if you go to a Japanese restaurant, those little orangey red things on top, that's tobiko. That's fish roe. And in the Greek restaurant, you'll have they'll mix it up and call it taramasalada. And that's a fish, that's snapper fish roe that's done as a spread. So there's lots of different fishy eggs out there.
And then how do you eat this? On crackers or how do they serve it?
They serve it with some crackers. Also, they have their own black bread they make on the premises, which is wonderful. And all the kind of accompaniments you would like. They also make their own in-house potato chips, which are nice to spread caviar on if you want that real double salt. Bang.
Do you like caviar generally? Are you a caviar guy?
No, I have it every now and then as a treat. It's usually really expensive and it's
salty.
Not always, but yes, well, it is salty.
Sure. And what did you think of this stuff?
Really good quality, beautifully prepared. I mean, beautifully presented, and they take care of it, and it's just fun. And the thing is, a la carte, you can get it for as little as just a few, 15 grams of something for as little as $10, or you can go all the way up to $145. But that's your sturgeon caviar, that's your etcetera, that's with all the accompaniments, all the creme fraiches and the eggs and the capers and the onions and the breads and the pickles and the potato chips.
That does sound like kind of fun the way you're telling it, though. Like, we would go there, and I can imagine myself having some vodka and trying some of that, and then maybe having a meal as well.
Absolutely, it's great shared. I would have a hard time sitting down to a caviar plate myself.
Yeah. Good.
But one of the other things is, because they have all these different caviars out there, you could sit there and say, I'd really like the looks of those scallops on the main course. How about I put about 10 grams of caviar on top of that? And they'll do that for you.
This is at Heritage. Where is it located?
It's in Humboldt Park. It's 2700 West Chicago Avenue.
So a Humboldt Park caviar bar.
Yeah. Yeah. Of all places.
Yeah.
But that stretch of Chicago Avenue is just booming. I mean, you just have split rail just a couple of blocks down from east of that, and good rents and population is kind of surging, I think, and restaurants
good place
are
to be, huh?
Yeah.
It's 146 on WGN. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune, in our studio. I asked you also off the air, I have to pause here, maybe you could just share with us on the air. If I have friends coming into town, or maybe we just wanted to do Chicago, is there a cocktail or a bar you like with maybe some holiday theme to it? Or maybe just what's a good, safe, smart go-to place in the city for folks that are visiting or traveling? Also, Mario Batali has joined the club, and I wondered what your thought about that story was in a minute. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune's in our studio. He has done the tea box. What do you call that?
I just read about it. I haven't done the tea box.
Yeah. We were asking you about what are some good bars, restaurants for, some holiday fare. What comes to mind when I throw that out there?
What comes to mind is funny, is Butch McGuire's, and I'm kind of out of that demographic as well. But we can go to Butch McGuire's at lunch, and it's just fun to see all that like Christmas decoration upon Christmas decoration. There's just all these little tchotchkes hanging off the ceilings, and that's always a little fun. And then up the northwest side is a place called Marie's Pizza, and it's right next to it's an old-timey kind of bar. You'd call it a dive bar, except it's way too clean and pretty.
Yeah.
But it's just a neighborhood bar. But for Christmas, they go out of their minds. I mean, there's not a square inch left unmolested, as they just put all these glittery and shiny and reindeery and Santa-y things everywhere.
It's almost like Asian New Year in there.
Oh,
it's
really?
Like glittery, and I don't know what I picture what it'd be like in China for New Year's.
Well, you know what I would do? Because I haven't taken a picture yet for my Christmas card. That Violetta, sounds like, Phil, it sounds like a fun place to go.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll wear my wacky sweater and against some backdrop that I haven't seen yet. Go get my picture taken.
With that sweater, you might look like a disembodied head. You might blend in so well.
And it's BYOB, so it's attached to a liquor store.
I love the BYOB.
And you just go to the liquor store, get your wine, and
wait a minute, but it's a bar, right?
It's not BYOB anymore. Maurice is a full-service bar, and they will pour you a drink. They'll pour you several.
Because we went to Tango Sur, which I think is BYOB.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And boy, do you save a lot of money on that.
Yes, you do.
I mean, when the bill came, and there'd been a bunch of us, and we'd been having I've been saying a gay old time because for some reason I have the Flintstones theme song in my head today. Anyway, we're having a swell time. And then the bill comes, and it wasn't that high. And I go, oh, yeah, we paid for the wine. We bought the wine at the liquor store.
Right.
And that is... You not only get the wine you absolutely want at the price you want, but it's just so much easier to dine out when they've got that.
And you're
feature.
Not tipping on the price of the wine either. So
you don't have
when you do that. When you do that with a group, you find to your surprise that liquor's probably half the bill.
Do you tip on the pre or after tax price of a meal?
I tip after.
Yeah, I do too. But a friend of mine is very diligent. He looks to see what the price of the food and beverage was.
Mm-hmm.
He excludes the tax when he's calculating his 20% or 15%.
He is probably more correct. I'm not that sticky about that sort of thing. I just say, I take that 20% is real easy to figure out. Move the decimal point, that's 10, multiply by 2, I'm out the door.
Yeah,
I don't want to do 15. Although if you do 20% on the pre-tax total or 15% on the post-tax total, you're tipping about the same.
Oh, because the tax isn't that much, in other words.
Right. The tax is, well, in the heart of the city, the tax is, 10% now, 9%?
What did you make of the Mario Batali story?
It's really distressing. It's more than the people are finally coming through and are coming forward and complaining about this sort of behavior. But even that sort of behavior exists. I mean, some of it was just at this level of crudity. Like, what are you doing? What do you mean you're going to at a party? You would grab someone and not by the shoulder.
Yeah.
And at what point in your life do you say, yes, I'm allowed to do that? And so a lot of this stuff just strikes me as just like, just power mad. Just, I can do it because I can get away with it. Therefore, I am going to do it.
Well, do you know, is the celebrity chef culture filled with guys like this?
I don't know, but it's sounding more and more like, yeah, it probably can be. Because if you're a chef, these days, a really high-end chef is probably like a rock star and probably has opportunities that are not available to normal people. And they're also, they have power. They can fire. They can hire.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Any industry, it seems, that is male-dominated and you can get rich doing politics, sports, entertainment, it leads to this kind of behavior.
Yeah.
Or attracts these kind of guys, or maybe they're everywhere and we're only hearing about it, but if it's happening in politics and sports, I would imagine it's happening in kitchens too across the country.
Well, the women are coming forward, are acknowledging, and even going way back to Anthony Bourdain's first book, Kitchen Confidential, that it's a pretty raunchy culture back in the kitchen. A lot of it, he explains, is just because it's high pressure and you're yelling all the time, and people don't have maybe the time to phrase things the nice way. You know, could you get me that? No, they don't say that.
There's one thing to have coarse language. There's another thing to start touching people.
I know, and I don't get it.
I wonder what the fallout will be for his restaurants, for his store here, for his brand.
It might be significant. In a month, it might be lost among 15 new names that come out.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, as long as people have discretion on where they spend their money and someone gets them mad, then that someone is going to take a hit professionally because people will spend elsewhere.
By the way, we mentioned your review of Heritage Restaurant, which you said is in what neighborhood again?
Humboldt Park.
Humboldt Park. Anything else you want to just mention that you've been writing about lately before we go?
Combining with the other question, Gibson's Italia, the new Gibson's that's over at Wolf Point, and that has the most spectacular view, looking east along the Chicago River, right where the north and south branches merge, and the river starts going east, and you sit in that dining room, and it's just, I mean, it's like most other Gibson's. They've thrown a few more pastas in there to make it sound a little more Italian, but you know what? It's a Gibson's. But it is so spectacular.
For
the view and the cocktail bar. So I was there, but not in time to see what their Christmas decorations are. So I don't know if it looks Christmassy. Knowing Gibson's, it probably looks a little, and it's probably very tasteful.
Yeah, right.
And then you got that view, and oh my goodness.
Well, that's a lit view, isn't it? And then the bar you mentioned was the one that's completely loaded with decorations.
Well, that's Butch McGuire's. Division Street.
And then you also mentioned
The Marie's Pizza and Packaged Liquors and Bar and you name it.
Phil, thanks for coming in. You can read him in the paper. You can read him online. Phil Vitale at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for saying hi.
My pleasure.
It's 157. This is WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have
to. Put it over here.
Here's John Williams.
Where? It is 207 on WGN. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. All the way until 3 o'clock, you can hear me Saturdays, too, from 10 a.m. until noon. Follow me on the Facebook. I'm King John there. And if you are a Twitterer, I'm WGN King John. We appreciate you tuning in. Lots of things going on there, including your chance to win a $100 gift card from Lou Malnati's Tastes of Chicago. Yeah, just tell me what the strangest, worst, weirdest Christmas gift is you ever got. Kayla said, my once boyfriend gave me a bottle of Heat Fuel Line antifreeze. I married him anyway. Kathy said, and I think it'll be more women chiming in now that I think about this, I got a barber kit and a snow shovel from my ex-husband. It was our first Christmas as a married couple. I was not amused. He wasn't either after I gave him a haircut that he will never forget. Touche, Kathy. Okay, I'm King John on Facebook. Post there and we'll award some prizes in a little while. I want to talk about Omarosa in a little while, too, because I think what she said about what she's not saying right now is very interesting. Everybody's talking about the net neutrality issue, and I think if you're like me, you don't really understand this issue that well. For instance, Fortune magazine wrote that all internet service providers, that's how you get your internet, must allow equal access to apps and content, regardless of the source. If it were not enforced, net neutrality, your internet service provider could make it harder for you to access parts of the internet at its own discretion, or it might not come in as well, or they might charge you more for it. But they also point out an argument for eliminating net neutrality. The argument for eliminating net neutrality posits that less regulation will lead to more investment and more competition in the internet service provider sector. That's what the FCC chair said. So we'll do a pro and a con on this, and we'll start with Peter Van Dorn from the Cato Institute. Hey, Peter, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
What do people understand the least, or what would you most want us to know about eliminating net neutrality?
Well, I would say that technologically, the net has not been neutral ever since it was privatized after the government gave up ownership of it in the early 1990s. So the reason the net has worked so well for most of us since then is actually because it hasn't been neutral. The way the government set it up, all the information on the net had to go one way. And then once it was privatized, it quickly became congested, and the so-called internet backbone providers, the base of the internet that you and I don't interact with as consumers but actually makes it run, those providers had market power. And so quickly, other providers started to do workarounds. So for at least 20 years, the packets, the units of information on the internet haven't moved neutrally in a generation. And so the reason the net works actually is it's been non-neutral. It couldn't work if it were neutral in that strict way that some people want it to work.
Well, I'm told more about what's going to happen than what has happened. And what the fear is that they're going to now charge you for access to Facebook. They'll bundle it in a packet like you would for your cable TV. Or that if you're going to get Netflix, Netflix is going to have to charge you more because the companies will charge Netflix more. And if Netflix doesn't play the game, then maybe their speed won't be as good and your movies will glitch. Talk about that for a little bit.
Well, actually, Netflix already pays a lot more than others. So email, for the internet to deal with email is quite simple. For it to deal with streaming movies that only go from a provider like Netflix down to the rest of us, that requires a lot more technical stuff to work right. And Netflix has paid more for years to actually get that to work from the consumer point of view. The fear that consumers are going to be charged more strikes me as it's certainly a possibility under the new regime. But given social media's awareness of all this, once some provider tries to do that, they'll be called out and then people will quickly switch to some other, and then particularly on the mobile side. And since firms know this, they're probably not going to do that in the first place because they'll be blackballed and customers won't like this kind of restraint.
Well, do you think that it will actually make it better? Because I think some of us are hoping that, you know, the best case scenario is that I'll still be able to go online, I'll still be able to play my games, I'll still be able to watch movies, whatever, and that I won't notice anything. I think that for some of us is the best case scenario. Would you suggest that you agree that that's going to happen? Would you also suggest that it's actually going to be better for us now that net neutrality is out of the way?
Well, the fear under net neutrality is that there was going to be federal price controls and pricing policy on various services, and that is what messed up the old landline telephone system. And so the fear in providers was that we'd end up with deteriorating service because, as Chairman Pai said, lack of investment because of price control. So that's now off the table, and I think you'll see a very robust response, and you won't see any of the kind of throttling back and things that some consumer groups worry about, because as I said, the providers that try to do that will be outed immediately, and they will, you know, suffer consumer disdain for having to try for doing that.
Without this government regulation, though, isn't this just going to enable the big, rich, powerful companies to have even more of a stranglehold?
I hear that argument a lot, and but then there are articles in the same newspapers in the business section about how Silicon Valley venture capital people will throw any lots of money at any kind of new internet firm, and so the business press says both that the biggies somehow control everything, and yet venture capitalists will fund any startup that a 22-year-old has in mind. So both can't be true. My sense is if someone has a business model that would challenge any existing firms like Google or Netflix or whatever, the Silicon Valley venture capital types would be quite happy to fund those companies.
Yeah.
Make a go of it against the existing one.
Well, that sounds ambitious to me, though, if you think about it. But who knows? Let me read you a sentence or two from, again, Fortune magazine in writing about this. It says, what will the internet look like without net neutrality? And they say, without the assurances of net neutrality, large internet companies could favor their own business interests. Telecom giants and Silicon Valley titans are likely to lobby lawmakers in the coming days and weeks. But for now, net neutrality could affect everything from internet speed to overall access. The elimination of net neutrality means that the internet providers can carve up service into fast and slow lanes. And where now you have good service, if you want to continue good service, you're going to have to pay a premium for that. Otherwise, you'll get kicked into the slow lane. It'll be longer wait times to get online. You might get kicked off more easily. What do you think about that, Dave? Peter?
That's certainly possible. But as I said, the technical demands of the internet hasn't been neutral since it's been privatized at all. So all of that has already taken place. It's just not been on the consumer side. It's been on the content provider side. They have paid more to get things to work when they needed to, when they had, in effect, use of the net that was much more complicated than ordinary email or something like that. The ability of firms to differentially charge consumers depends on consumer reaction. And as I said, because consumers will not react pleasantly to that, most firms, I think, would be very risk-averse about trying that, because the minute they try to do that, the net will be full of outrage, and then the argument will be that consumers should defect from whomever their provider is and go to someone else that's offering a very different kind of service.
Well, I hope that they're offering a good deal, too. I mean, maybe competition will provide that, but will I really have that many options, do you think?
You'll have more options on the mobile side than on the hard side.
Yeah.
Right now, most places have two LAN competition, two sources of LAN internet provision, being the cable provider or a telephone provider. Other people have satellite, then with a DSL through the phone system. And so the mobile people, who are actually often younger and worried the most about the repeal of this rule, actually, I think, have the most options in their cell service.
Okay, Peter Van Doren is with the Cato Institute. So the flip side of that, a tech writer over at Slate says, oh, no, it's not like this. Before I go to her, any sort of preemptive salvo you'd like to lob out there, Peter?
No, the claim that there's a possibility that lots of mischief could occur is certainly correct. I'm not claiming that the legal or technical possibility doesn't exist, but we haven't had a legal net neutrality regime because it's always been contested in the court. So it really hasn't been in place either on the technical side or on the legal side. So if people look to the past about the internet, it's not that the internet's been regulated and that's why it worked. It's actually been unregulated and that's why it worked. So the possibility that bad things could occur, yes, they are now legally and technically possible, but I would, hold my fire until those things actually happen before I would ask the government to do something about it.
Over at the Cato Institute. Peter, thanks for your time this afternoon. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It's 218. Okay, what's the other side of that coin in a minute? April Glazer joins us from Slate Magazine. April, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
We just visited with a guy over at the Cato Institute, a conservative think tank, and their view on it was that the worry about net neutrality going away is worry, but not fact. In fact, the internet has been largely unregulated, and folks seem to be okay with it. Is there the possibility for trouble? Yeah, but he said, let's hold our fire until that happens. What do you say about that?
Well, I would rather not wait until something bad happens. And the truth is that the internet did have a level of rules. I mean, there were guidelines in place, and the FCC did act to punish, for instance, Comcast when it blocked or when it punished Comcast for blocking BitTorrent traffic over its network, you know, back in 2007. You know, we've seen Apple attempt to or AT&T rather attempt to block FaceTime on Apple. And then that was also received heavy pushback. And so there's been some guidelines for a long time. It's just that they were never codified until 2015. And now Chairman Pai has completely undone that. And those 2015 rules were really hard to get. Now, we don't know how bad it's going to be. But the truth is that the reason why we have rules is to prevent it from getting bad. You know, it could be that as soon as the rules are enacted, AT&T speeds up access to Facebook and Verizon speeds up access to Netflix, and all of a sudden, you know, the internet is just a much different place.
He said, for instance, if, say, you're the slow lane and the fast lane, and if you just want to pay the freight like you do now, you'll be in a slow lane. And if you want to have fast access, if you want to have no glitches, then you need to pay the premium. He said, sure, they can do that, but I don't think they will, because if they did, there'd be outrage. Customers would be upset. Nobody wants to borrow that problem. He didn't think that I would notice much of a difference.
Well, you might not notice at first, right? But eventually you'll realize that the local restaurant whose website you would go to see what their menu is that day is loading really slow. And so you just end up going to Yelp instead, right? Or you'll notice that the local news website that you love and that you go to for your local reports is slow. And so what do? You navigate away to the big national site that can afford that fast lane access. It's true that they might not roll it out in some big way, and it might be piecewise, but we might not notice it right away. But eventually, the way we use the internet will change. And you know what they'll also do is perhaps strike deals. You know, so for instance, AT&T, who has a pending merger with Time Warner, which also owns HBO, they could, for instance, say HBO is much faster on AT&T, and therefore, if you're an HBO fan, you'll be more likely to subscribe to AT&T than Verizon. And that's just a very anti-competitive marketplace.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and that's a bad thing. Why? Because that's anti-competitive. He also suggested, though, that what's going to happen if you keep it as wild as the West can be, rather than under the umbrella of government regulation, it will, in fact, inspire more startups. He said the Silicon Valley's always throwing money at some entrepreneurs who have another internet gadget or idea, and this will encourage more innovation. What do you say about that?
I actually think the opposite is true, because the people who are going to kind of set the price for these fast lane speeds, or the companies rather, are those that are already in power, those incumbents, and they can afford to spend a lot for that priority access. And they'll probably price out those smaller websites that can't afford for that fast lane access. And when it comes to investment, you know, I think that, you know, VCs and people who are starting startups will have a much harder time getting their new website, their new product out to the public, because they don't have the money to pay for that fast lane access. And the internet has the possibility of becoming a much more boring place, where those who are in power just become further entrenched.
April, I used the internet in 2015. There was no net neutrality in place then. Seemed to be okay for me. So if in 2020 it was like it was in 2015, I honestly don't know if I would have a problem with that. What do you say about that line of thinking?
Well, that's not necessarily true, because it's not that there weren't net neutrality rules in place. It's that there actually were guidelines in place, but they were challenged in court, and the court said that the FCC had to, if they were going to make rules, then they had to, you know, do it in a more solid way. And so the FCC went back and made more solid rules. But there were guidelines in place, and the FCC would enforce them, and they would slap ISPs on the wrist here and there for acting in non-neutral ways. And, you know, ISPs were, you know, not not blocking and not discriminating against websites because they were following those guidelines that exist. 2015 rules came in, and those guidelines were actually firmed up.
Do you think that'll happen? I mean, I hear these doomsday scenarios. Do you think I will have trouble getting to my favorite sites, that I will be charged extra, that I will have an appreciable difference, either in terms of dollars and cents or internet access, period?
Again, I don't think it's, I think it's going to be more like death by a thousand cuts, right? So no. I don't think it's going to be like the first day that the rules are on the books, all of a sudden you go to your local news website and it takes 5 minutes to bring up a page, right? But eventually you'll start to notice that you migrate towards a faster loading page, or you'll notice that, hey, Skype is free with Comcast, and so I'm going to use Comcast, right? And all of a sudden, you know, your choices are being dictated by these incentives and these priority packages that are being put up. And again, you know, we're also going to see this on mobile. So when they could institute packages, for instance, when all your data is used up, you still have free access to Facebook or, you know, some host of social media sites. And who's going to get to choose what social media sites get that free access? The internet providers. And so they're going to choose who gets to win and who loses on the marketplace.
And they'll be making deals with those preferred providers or content creators so that the big, powerful companies get richer and more powerful.
So think of think of it like a cable package, right? They would rather you have your apps as if it's like an HBO service where you pay for each app or pay for each channel, as opposed to just being able to download whatever new innovative thing ends up on the app marketplace that you want to use and contribute to your technological life.
But do they do that in Japan and Canada and Brazil? I mean, much of the world, China, they don't have net neutrality. Are they bundling their services? That is, you have to pay extra to go to Facebook or something like that?
They do that in Europe. For example, they have net neutrality rules, but there are no rules prohibiting what's called zero rating, which is what we're talking about now. And that's when the provider does not charge to reach access to a particular website, or it doesn't count against your data caps. And in those countries, you know, people who subscribe to these social plans or these video streaming plans so they get free access to these particular websites, they're not navigating to new websites, right? Again, the market becomes more closed. There's less options because people are going with what the incumbent ISPs are dictating them towards.
April Glazer writes for Technology at Slate. April, I don't know if you and I visited on this show before. You're terrific. I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thanks. I really enjoyed it. Take care.
There's the pro and the con on all of that. It's 2:29. The news is right around the corner. This is WGN. Let's do this. My number is 312-981-7200. We have these. By the way, thank you to Wingstop. They just dropped off a whole bunch of packets of different, buckets of different kinds of wings, the chicken wings from Wingstop.
What?
Man. And one of them, I don't know, that's kind of a lemony, cheesy, zesty thing on there, kind of a dry rub sprinkle, and then you dip that in the ranch
sauce.
Can
I just say that...
oh, man, is that good.
I mocked your Wingstop affection earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, I was wrong.
Yeah. It's too late, Steve.
No, I was wrong. I'm just saying it.
Have you tried Wingstop wings?
Yeah, they brought some in, and I'm
acknowledging. Wait a minute, you got some upstairs?
Not today, another day.
Previously. What? Funny, because I was not alerted to that when that happened. Now they're downstairs. You're up on the seventh floor.
Right.
I wonder how many of these are going to make the trip up the elevator.
I already had my lunch.
I'm having mine right now. Mm. They also have the barbecue ones. They have ones with kind of an Asian flair going on. And they brought in these French fries with kind of a seasoning drizzle on them. Holy shnikey.
You're going to be okay? You want me to do the weather again? Or
okay, now how about this? I want you to call or text 312-981-7200 and tell me the craziest, dumbest, funniest, weirdest Christmas gift you ever got. And we'll give away some gift cards to Lou Malnati's Tastes of Chicago. We mentioned this one. John, a coworker, gave me a salt and pepper wooden dispenser. You know, the shakers. One was in the shape of an avocado. The other was a tomato. I think it was a last-minute gift because they were greasy and dirty, and they had salt inside both of them. This one says, John, several years ago, my brother bought my husband a Homer Simpson figurine. He got him the same one every year for 5 years running now. No idea why. We've never asked. I kind of like that kind of a gift. Just something odd and funny, and it's kind of a running gag in the house. That's pretty good. Your suggestions, please. Tom, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good, King John. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Likewise.
Yes, I got a crazy gift, and I wound up actually using it for a Halloween costume. I got a welding hood.
Well, are you a welder?
No.
Was there some joke like everybody knows you, blah, 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 and the welding hood made sense? Or
I don't know. I think it was like a hint to maybe start the hobby or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe you've got bad breath. I've not met you in person, Tom, but a welding helmet. I'll tell you what, that's crazier than the salt and pepper shakers. I wonder where you get one of those and what one of those bad boys run. You know, that's probably not an inexpensive gift.
Well, you know what? They've got that Harbor Freight now. I think you can get them, you know, relatively. They can be, I think, pretty expensive. You're right.
People were buying those, I believe, when the solar eclipse, the total eclipse happened, and they wanted those.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I wish I would have had that handy. Yeah.
Well, here in Chicago, you wouldn't have needed it, or there wasn't much to look at. Hey, all right. Hold on a second, Tom. If you make the cut, you get a $100 gift card to Lou Malnati's. Kevin, you're on WGN. Your gift was what, sir?
A pet rock with bedding and food.
Was that like in 1976 or more recently?
That was like in 77.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pet rock with the food and the bedding as well, huh?
Correct, yeah. You turn the box inside down, it came in with sawdust and a little baggie of sand for food.
That was such a ripoff. It's amazing that they were selling rocks and sand, and people were making that guy rich. Hold on a second, Kevin. Thank you. Kathy, you're on WGN. What do you have?
Hi. My brother-in-law bought every – this is before Costco when people were buying these mass quantities of things. But I don't know where he got it from, but it was a 2-gallon jug of Breck shampoo, and each family got one, and all the guys are bald.
Okay.
We ended up using the shampoo for carpet cleaning.
You had more than you ever would need, huh?
Yes.
Hold on a second. We'll go to line 4. This is Donna. You're on WGN. Donna, you're on the air. What have you got for us? Hi, Donna. Oh, Donna.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Donna,
hey, this is...
this is Donna, though.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I got from Hickory Farm when I was married. My husband got me one of those big sausages.
Yeah.
Gift wrapped from Marshall Field. And
hold on a second. Someone just shut you off. Someone's messing with our screen here. Oh, wow. Look at that. Somebody messed with our screen, and now all the calls have been eliminated. I don't know what's going on here.
A really big wrapped sausage, though, from Hickory Farm sounds weird.
Well, it's funny because on the screen it said a jogging suit. And then she was telling, because if somebody gives you, no wife wants a jogging suit for Christmas, okay? And if she's an Olympian, I don't think she wants a jogging suit for Christmas. A Hickory Farm sausage, I've actually given that. In fact, if you don't know what to get me and you walked in with a great big old summer sausage or pepperoni from Hickory Farms, I wouldn't complain about that. I don't know what's going on with our phones here. They're all screwed up now.
I got a tire pressure gauge once. I had a pretty beat up car. We called it the rough sting. And my tires kept getting low.
Yeah.
So my partner at the time got me a tire gauge reader.
I think this is the problem a lot of us have with giving gifts. And that is we go, wow, Violetta could sure use that. I know, I'll give it to her. And Christmas is coming, so it's a Christmas gift.
Did I mention it was on a keychain? So it was a keychain tire.
It's that much more thoughtful.
Oh, God.
So then you say, well, but no, that's not appropriate for a holiday gift. So then you say, I'm not going to do that. But
I could have used a new tire. If my tire keeps running out of air, well, I don't need to know. I need a new tire.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had a working tire pressure gauge, you wouldn't need a new tire. So that would be a nice thing to have, wouldn't it? How thoughtful that would be. No? No, you didn't. That didn't work, huh?
Hmm.
I'm trying to sell that and it's not happening.
Oh, he did too.
It's 2:46. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take the calls that we've taken and you will be the winners of the $100 gift card. from the Tastes of Chicago from Lou Malnati's. Thank you, gang, for that. It's 2:46 on WGN. What was that tweet that somebody sent or texted?
Yeah, we have a text that came in from 224 that says your screen's messed up because of the overturning of net neutrality. So
they just the very whiff of net neutrality going away, and all of a sudden my phone lines and screen just blew up and everything went to hell.
Yeah. Coincidence?
Yeah, and there I was soft pedaling the impact of this thing. It was instantaneous and cataclysmic. Doug wanted to add to the list of bad, weird, or terrible Christmas presents. Hey, Doug, you're on the air. You're on WGN.
Hi, John.
Hey.
Yeah, one year I got an ice scraper, but I also got two. It was one of those with the mittens in them.
Yeah.
You slide your hand in a mitten that has the ice scraper, and yeah. they were in the shape of like a polar bear claw or a Yeti
nice.
Hand or something like that.
Nice.
And yeah, I'm like, one fine, but two, okay.
Really, I would have taken the cash for the other one, and you could have saved your money.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm sorry about that, my friend. Okay, well, thank you for the phone call, Doug, and thank you for the contribution. There's a growing list on my Facebook page. Also on Twitter, I'm WGN King John on Twitter, if you follow me there. And I posted a picture of something that was on my desk that you may want to read and follow as well. So Omarosa denies White House firing on Good Morning America, says rumors are the result of a vendetta. Outgoing aide, she had one of these titles that I don't exactly understand. You know, she was the Constituent Services Deputy Secretary in the Communications Wing of the White House.
It's just something to put on your LinkedIn, those titles.
I know. I really believe that. And I believe everybody, every big company and probably every political organization for sure is like that. They go, hey, Bob, you're my guy. We'll make you the Lois. What's Bob? Get him a title. And they go, all right, deputy. Start with deputy. Communications assistant for outreach. Outreach is a good thing. Who could be against that? And so that's what she was. Widely known as the villain of Trump's Apprentice and Celebrity Apprentice TV shows, she remained steadfast. The rumors about her departure were the result of one person with a personal vendetta against her. She noted that she was one of 30 assistants to the president who reported to John Kelly. She denies claims that Kelly tried to limit her access to the president. She said, certainly I had more access than most, and people had problems with that. And people had problems with my 14-year relationship with the president. Because I'm serving until the 20th, I have to be careful about how I answer this. But when asked on Good Morning America about if she was concerned about the way the president handled Charlottesville or his endorsement of Roy Moore, she said, I'm serving until the 20th, so I have to be careful about how I answer this, but there were a lot of things I observed over the past year that I was uncomfortable with. She said she doesn't want to say anything until she gets out of office, but it sounds like she's got some stuff to say. So we'll see what she has to say down the road.
Well, she was as fast out as she was in to office.
Well, when did she go in?
Well, Trump put her in, but I mean, she never had any political...
Sometimes
background.
You would see, yeah, that's for sure. Sometimes you would see meetings and there's, you know, 72 people around some gigantic table or there's a photo op and she would be there. She was one of the few African-Americans on the staff and she was in charge of some sort of outreach. I really don't know what her job was. And I'm like you, I'm not really sure that she had anything you might really consider a job. But maybe she did. Maybe she was, you know, busting butt every day long and working with people and good things were happening. Who knows? But she's making it clear that there were things that were happening in the White House that as a person of color she was uncomfortable with. And she doesn't want to say anything about that until she gets out of office. So we'll wait and see about that. It's 2:54. This is WGN. Team Ro Khan is just now coming into the studio. Several people with large boxes of stuff.
Very important.
I know. Well, it's a big deal. Lou's going to come. Ro's going to come strolling in here in just a second. Talk about what he's doing on his show today.